What's up, everybody? This is Grant at Cause Artist. In episode 205 of the Disruptors for Good podcast, I speak with Inna Braverman, the founder of EcoWave Power, about her journey in the renewable energy industry and the potential of wave power. In the episode, Inna shares her inspiration for starting EcoWave Power, which stemmed from her personal experience with the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. She explains the concept of wave power and its advantages over other renewable energy sources. Inna also discusses the challenges of scaling wave power, including regulatory hurdles and funding limitations. She emphasizes the importance of policy support for the commercialization of wave energy. The conversation concludes with a discussion on the future goals and successes of EcoWave Power. When you get a chance, please share, rate, and subscribe. Now, let's get into the episode. Well, thank you so much, Inna, for joining me today. Very excited to chat about your journey. Read a little bit about why you started EcoWave Power and sort of your upbringing. And it's pretty amazing that you launched a public company at 24. It's pretty remarkable. Before we get into EcoWave Power and everything you're doing there, talk a little bit about the catalyst and maybe the inspiration for starting EcoWave Power. What was that light bulb moment like, I guess, for you, if you want to take us back as far as you want?
So I don't think starting EcoWave Power was one light bulb moment. I think it was kind of how my life started and continued, because I live in Israel, but I wasn't born there. I was born in Ukraine in 1986. And 2 weeks after I was born, the Chernobyl nuclear reactor exploded, which caused the largest in history nuclear disaster. And I was one of the babies that got hurt from the negative effects of the explosion. I actually had a respiratory arrest and a clinical death. And luckily, my mother approached the crib on time, and she looked down at me and she saw me pale and blue and not breathing. And she gave me mouth-to-mouth resuscitation until the ambulance came and saved my life. So I got a second chance in life. I don't remember any of it because obviously I was a baby. But, you know, every time we were having family dinners or events, everybody would keep saying, like, wow, that's so cool. You died and then you kind of came back to life and you got a second chance in life. So I really grew up feeling like, wow, maybe I'm special. Maybe I need to make some sort of change or make some impact on the world, because I didn't just get a second chance in life for no reason. And when I was 4, my family immigrated from the Ukraine to Israel, and we settled in a very, very small town in the north of Israel called Akko. And, you know, I still kept having this feeling that I want to make a change and impact, but it's a super small town. It didn't even have a cinema or, like, you know, stuff that are used today. So as I grew up a little bit and, you know, I had to choose what to study in the university, I chose to study political science, because I thought that maybe, okay, a girl from a small town in Ukraine and then in Israel can make a big change for politics. And when I finished my university, there was no lineup of politicians waiting for a young lady with a major in political science. then I started my first work was as English Hebrew translator for a renewable energy company. And there I really discovered kind of the whole amazing world of renewable energies. And whereas wind and solar sectors were already packed with like technologies and competition, like there was nothing to innovate or to develop, wave energy was kind of, you know, the exciting new kid in the block of renewables. Everybody wanted it. Everybody believed in it. But no company, no matter on the budget or the resources that they had, no company was able to make it a reality. So I was 24. I had no money, no contacts, no technological background. And I said to myself, okay, all these huge billion-dollar companies can do it. I can do it. And that was kind of the beginning of EcoWave Power.
Wow. I mean, that's... And so the idea of wave power, I guess, as much as you can describe it, right, via like a audio type of thing, like, I guess, you know, we know wind power, we know solar power. Is wave power, try to explain what wave power is to to us.
Wave power is the same as other renewable energy sources such as wind and solar in the fact that it's a renewable energy source. Like, we're getting the source from Mother Nature. Like, in case of solar, we're getting sun, and the sun is being transmitted to clean electricity. In our case, we take the power of the waves, ocean and sea waves, and through a technological process, we harness clean energy from the power of the waves. The difference between wave energy and other renewable energy sources, such as wind and solar, is that wave energy is the least intermittent source of renewable energy. Meaning, for example, solar energy from the sun is an amazing renewable energy source that we all heard about. But when you have the night, you don't produce anything. When you have cloud coverage, you don't produce anything. When you have winter, you don't produce anything. Or pollution like in China. A wave energy in suitable locations can operate 24/7 around the clock. That's a game changer for a renewable energy source. Also, when you're looking at wind energy, it's mostly dominant early in the morning or late at night, when actually population usage is at its lowest. With wave energy, it's not the case. Another advantage of wave energy is that it's actually the most dense source of energy there is out of all renewable energy sources. So basically, the density of water is 832 times greater than the density of air, meaning we can produce much larger electricity amounts with much smaller, thus cheaper devices. And I think one of the most important factors is the fact that two-thirds of the world population is currently living within 200 kilometers of a coastline.
Yes.
So with this type of population distribution, the need for wave energy is really undeniable.
Real quick, I want to go back to the decision to kind of actually start this. Like you said, you know, no money, sort of no contacts. Like, what was that process like for you to actually say you want to do it? And then how long before, you know, you actually did it, right? And put together company, put together the team through those early stages of when you made the decision to do it, to actually, you know, the process of going live, let's say, right? And I guess you went public pretty early because it was pretty soon after that, right?
So I don't think that like the beginning of EcoWave Power was really like 100%, let's call it my decision. It was more like, you know, the right thing happened to enable it.
Yeah.
Because when I got interested with the power of the waves and I saw there's a big need and demand for this type of product and nobody is able to kind of develop a product of this sort, I started researching the wave energy field and seeing like where all other companies failed. Like, you know, they have all the resources, they have all the technical knowledge. Why can't they make wave energy happen? And I started thinking of my own kind of, based on the failure points, I started thinking of my own product, kind of the EcoWave Power product, became to be the EcoWave Power product, that will kind of fix these bugs or these problems that I saw that all companies that existed shared the same five problems. Again, I was super young. I was in my early 20s. No money to invest, no contacts. I grew up in a small town, so it's not like I could contact some big investor or friends that I have that, you know, that are throwing cash at you for your inventions.
Yes.
So I kind of put the idea aside as unrealistic. So I actually did not have an intention to establish EcoWave Power as a starting point. And then one day I went to a social event and there's a guy that came and sat next to me. His name is David Levo. And he looked a little hippie, you know, ripped jeans, like strings on the hands. And it's in Israel and he started talking to me in English. And he goes to me, what's your passion? So I said, wave energy, because that's what I was researching. That's what I was really passionate about. And it turned out that this hippie guy is a serial entrepreneur that did a successful exit in the past. And since then, he's investing in different companies. And he also was thinking at a completely different side of the world. He was thinking about wave energy with one of his, like, with some of his funds, he invested in a surf hotel in Panama. So he was sitting there during renovation, watching the power of the wave, saying, wow, there must be something better that you can do with that other than marine sports. So when I said wave energy to him, it was like match made in business heaven. So he was very interested and he said, okay, can you make me a business plan? Can you like describe your idea? Let's like brainstorm and so on. And that was kind of the beginning of EcoWave Power.
Wow.
And regarding going public, the company went public actually in 2019, which is 8 years after establishment. So it wasn't that fast. And we're publicly traded on NASDAQ under the stock symbol wave.
What was that, I guess, that the process like of, you know, developing the business plan and going through that process? I think that the great advantage of being young is that you're very naive, right? You believe that you could do things that you wouldn't think are possible later in life. So going through that process of even just building development, like building the business plan, did you have, I guess you had research or you had how long was the product after you sort of, you know, maybe got a little bit of funding, did the business plan? How long was that before then you had like a product in, let's say, the field, right? Actually capturing energy.
The business plan that I've made, again, remember it was in my early 20s and I don't come from the business world. So when David requested me like to submit him a business plan for the idea, I went to Google and I typed how to prepare a business plan. Preferably
as we all do.
And so I made a business plan with some assumptions, you know, from a research that I found online. The first product that we implemented was like 6 months later. from the moment of the business plan. It was okay. In condition. We did basically wave pool testing in Ukraine, in the Hydromechanical Institute in Ukraine. And then from wave pool testing, a few months later, we went over first real conditions testing. And the first real condition testing that we did was also, was back then Ukraine, right now it's unclear, was in Crimean Peninsula, sure. Which became since there kind of a problematic territory on the Black Sea. So that's where we actually deployed the first real conditions installation. And the choice to really do the first experiments in Ukraine was I was born there and I knew that the costs of engineering there are much lower, whereas the engineering level is high. So that was the reasoning for doing the first test and development there, is in order to save funds until we actually know that the product works.
It looks like just from like the videos and sort of the imagery is that with wave power, you don't need these massive sort of construction elements that go into like solar panels, right? These are sort of, you need a lot of space. Mm-hmm. You know, you have these large panels, they have to be built. Same with wind power. You have these big, tall alien spaceship like turbines, right? And, you know, those get bad over time and then you got to replace them. And then where do those things go? And so there's big construction cost there. But it seems like with the wave energy part, there's not this big sort of construction hurdle that you have to reach in the manufacturing part. It's just really you develop the part where you kind of harness it and then it goes through that technology aspect after the energy, so the waves sort of capture the energy. I guess my question is, what can it produce compared, like we talked about solar and wind, maybe do a comparison of like a day, right? Like what can wind energy produce comparable to like, you know, wind and solar, and then how long can it be harnessed and then actually put on the grid? I guess just walk us through the process of.
So I'll address it in a few segments. First of all, you're right. The technology that we developed is very kind of simple and straightforward. We don't need this huge construction like you're seeing, like the wind towers, you know, holding the turbines. The reason is that we chose to connect to existing man-made structures such as piers, breakwaters, jetties. So we're taking something that is already there, that's already existent, and we're just connecting our floaters to the external part of that marine structures. So we're not basically harming the environment in any way because we're not putting a new presence on the seabed. We're just connecting to this bulky, huge cement structure, which is not prime real estate. It's just used for breaking the waves and protecting coastal and port population. Or activities. It's definitely simpler than those technologies. And that's kind of, I think, was the good part in the development of EcoWave Power, because if you look at our competitors and what basically the other companies in the wave energy field did, they went into the offshore, which was 4 or 5 kilometers into the sea. And then what they had to build in the middle of the sea or the ocean was much more complex than any wind or solar installation. Because they needed ships and divers and underwater mooring and cables and try to operate and maintain something in the middle of the sea. So they had a lot of survivability problems. So we kind of solved that aspect and made it easier. Now, in terms of generation of different technologies, it's difficult to compare it like that because it's really dependent on the location in the world that you're in. Because some countries in the world are very rich with the sun resources, some don't have the sun at all, and they have super strong wind, and some have winds and waves and sun, and like it's a combination of all. And even though I'm not objective, like I'm a big supporter of wave energy, obviously, and according to the World Energy Council, wave energy can generate twice the amount of electricity that the world produces now. I do think that the solution for the world, you know, decarbonization, or the solution for the climate change and everything bad that we're seeing right now in the world is a combination of all renewable energy sources together. Only then you will be able to have like 100% clean grid or 100% clean environment.
I guess when you talk about scale, because like you said, a lot of the world lives within a couple hundred miles of water or coastline of some sort. I guess what are the hurdles right now?
The challenges that are out there for wave energy is not mostly technological, because the technology is pretty simple and straightforward. The main challenges for wave energy is really regulatory, because wave energy is a new type of renewable energy. So many of the countries do not have any policies, laws, licensing pathways, anything that's necessary to actually deploy a project. So it happens that basically sometimes we get approached by a port or by a coastal municipality or a government saying, wow, yeah, we're so excited, we love your technology, come and deploy it. And then we say, great, like, what do we have to do to deploy? Which licenses do we have to submit? And they say, we don't know. And then they start legislating. So it can take us as little as 6 months to build, let's say, a pilot project or a first project, and as long as 2, 3, 4 years to get the legislation in place, because it's long, it's bureaucratic. So that's a gap that definitely has to be closed in order to enable the commercialization of wave energy. And the second challenge is, I would definitely say, funding, but not in traditional sense, because when we were out there as a startup developing the product, you have a lot of R&D grants, you know, develop the first pilot, do a feasibility study, check your formula. So for that, there's a lot of grants available. But for actually when you're entering the scaling up of the technology, when you're ready to build big scale in a new technology, that's when the funding is not available. Because on the one hand, you're out of the startup mode, so R&D grants do not necessarily apply. On the other hand, you're still not an established like power company with thousands of megawatts installed all over the world. So you're kind of in between, and it's even called like a bit value of death for companies, because they finish the development of the product, but they're not big enough to get, let's say, debt financing from banks, like in a large size to enable construction of multiple power stations. So that's the second thing that really has to be solved for wave energy to commercialize.
It seems like policy is one of the biggest parts of all this. At least here in America, wind and solar get tons of subsidies to develop the technology, to install it. And so there is this, like you said, like a couple decades long policy base that has been built up. And then we just, you know, we have built a bill that was just passed, you know, last year, where a lot of commitment is going to renewable energy and to get all these different technologies on the grid. So when you put your policy hat on, is there parts of the world that are sort of getting it right? Like is Israel's policy or parts of Europe or the US, like are there places getting it right where they look at it, they understand it, they say, hey, let's write policy around this to where you can innovate quickly for this renewable energy source?
So about locations that are getting it right, I would definitely say California. We are about to launch our first US-based wave energy installation in the port of Los Angeles in California. And we work together with Alta Sea, which is kind of a blue hub in the port of LA, and assisted them and the government of California in drafting a dedicated wave energy legislation, SB605, which a few months ago was actually signed into law by Governor Newsom, which I think is the first kind of wave energy law in the United States that I know of. Currently, we're also working with the legislators in the state of New Jersey wanting to pass similar wave energy policy to enable also the commercialization of wave energy. So I would definitely say that it's a step in the right direction. I would also like to point out Gibraltar. Gibraltar is the first place in the world where we built a grid-connected power station. They're the first one that enabled us to connect this kind of new source, which might be scary, you know, to the actual national electrical grid. And they really, it's a smaller country. It has a population of 30,000 people. So there's less bureaucracy involved in all the, I guess, approval processes. So, but they did a really, really good job from being a country with no renewable energy when we came there, to really drafting renewable energy policies, which enabled us to connect with the grid, to get a feed-in tariff price for each kilowatt hour we sent to the grid, and even deploy other renewable energy sources and use the same policy that they did for wave energy and then deploy solar and other renewable energy sources.
The grid part is interesting because let's take the California example. When you do something like that, does that connect to an established grid that they already have?
Yes. We connect to existing electrical grids because it makes sense. You know, the grid is there. Most of the grid has an available capacity, meaning like some space in the grid to accept additional energy into it. There's like different substations that are located in different locations around the country. So we connect to existing grid. It saves costs. It enables us easy transmission to every location within the state or the country, depending on the grid structure. But there is also a possibility some locations do not want it to connect to the grid. So, for example, we just did a feasibility study for Chevron for connecting wave energy to gas drilling or oil drilling platforms. Yep. So then they just want the electricity to go to some sort of battery and then power the platform. So yeah. You have also different off-grid applications for islands, for oil platforms, for like remote locations, maybe for army usage.
Yeah, that's a really, that seems to be, I mean, you could probably power certain islands just with wave energy. Or like, ironically, oil rigs, that would be cool. That would be good branding for both, you know, the oil industry and the renewable energy industry to kind of come together and, you know, power the oil drills with renewable energy.
Oil, gas, coal, all the traditional polluting energy sources are definitely something that has to slowly or gradually fade out from the world. Again, because right now, according to the United Nations, 60% of the world's global greenhouse gas emissions are from the way that we produce our energy. So they have to fade out. But a lot of people get their jobs are dependent on these industries. Our electricity needs and economy growth is dependent on these industries to a certain extent. And this industry really grew because they existed before renewable energy ever existed. So they grew very strong in terms of financial capability, in terms of engineering capabilities and so on. For example, right now, a co-investor in our Port of LA project is Shell. Shell is not traditionally a renewable energy developer, but look, they're coming into a wave energy project. They're becoming a strategic partner in a wave energy project. And that's a start because everybody has to start somewhere.
Yes, as they should, right? That they, like you said, they have the capabilities to actually make all this work, and they can transition as well and still maintain their profitability and still maintain the job creation that they do. So there is a path, I think. It's just, it's a long one, right? Yes. It's a long path that takes a while, and they still have to, you know, like you still have to cater to shareholders at the end of the day. And that's the difficult transition that they have is, you know, keeping stock price high while transitioning to a renewable way of their business, because they just won't exist, right, in 100 years unless they make the transition themselves.
I think you're right that you're saying that it takes time, but I think really specifically renewable energy industry, and I'm talking about all types, solar, wind, wave, tidal, whatever there is taking longer. Although renewable energy is high on the agenda, we see it on the news, we hear it from the United Nations, we hear it from our government saying, oh, I will come and I'll do more renewable and invest more in the green and in the impactful. In the real life, there's not really an urgency because, like, you know, it's not like you cut everybody from electricity. And even if people are seeing, like, that, you know, in Brazil, there's big fires or there's a typhoon or hurricane somewhere that is, like, derived from climate change, like, it's a one time event that is being kind of, people say, well, who knows, maybe it's related to climate change, maybe it's not. Unfortunately, the sad truth is, like, if I'm developing right now an app, you know, an app, a game or an AI chip, most likely it will, like, commercialize faster than renewable energy. Although renewable energy, there should be much more urgency. And, you know, it's interesting that sometimes when you don't get a problem with large visuals and sound effects, it doesn't seem like a big problem. I'll give you an example. We started the interview with the fact that I was born and 2 weeks after the Chernobyl nuclear reactor exploded. And the Chernobyl nuclear reactor really exploded. You know, there was a lot of smoke and there was like fire. Yeah. There was like, it was all over the news. Like, it was really like, you know, a scene from a movie, unfortunately. So all the countries in the world left everything, sent experts, tools, money, just shut it off, stop the pollution, stop the fires. Like, everybody got super stressed because there was a big boom and with visuals. Climate action, or let's say climate change, is killing much more people than Chernobyl ever did. Like, according to the World Health Association, right now one of 7 people in the world died premature death directly resulting from pollution. Like, imagine the numbers. And yet, because it does not come with all the sound effects and visuals, it's not being taken as seriously. And that's unfortunate.
The one theory I have around, you know, maybe why it hasn't taken off, just here in America, we pay our electricity bill, right, through the electricity company.
Yeah.
And if you want to have renewable energy or solar energy, right, you have to, like, go out of your way, research to get solar panels installed on your roof. You have to get approved for it. It's pretty expensive to do so. Most people are never going to do that. Even though there are subsidies for that, it's still very expensive for people to do. It still takes time. It's where I think it would start to scale very rapidly if they were the same way we pay our monthly bill, right? Whether it's $100 a month, $120
$5 a month to traditional electric companies, we, as the consumer, can easily pay a large scale, you know, solar energy company that same monthly thing, to where we know our energy comes from renewable energy into our homes. Now, I don't know if that's possible, because you need, if you need to have solar energy or solar panels on your roof to do that, or if a large offsite solar panel area can capture that and harness that energy and then send it to local housing around that grid. That's the, to me, that was the way that we could scale this, because consumers will easily understand that, oh, I pay a monthly bill, my energy now comes from the solar grid that is 25 miles away. They can understand that. It's easy to pay. I don't have to install anything on my roof. I don't know if that's possible, but if that were possible, that would be the way to scale renewable energy to residential, here in America, at least. That's just how our...
There are some locations, I think even in America, I don't remember exactly where, but they did the experiments with decentralized grids, meaning exactly what you said, that your house gets from solar, another house gets from wind, and each house pays to the actual distributor that it gets the energy from. So it is a possibility. Pilots have been run on smaller scale communities where you can actually like provide 100% of the energy and monitor it with the tools. So it is a possibility. It might and probably will happen in big scale in the future. And probably you're right, it will also, when it happens, will cause more awareness. Because if you actually get a bill and you're saying, it's not only saying you, let's say, purchase 100 kilowatt hours this month, but it will actually say that you purchase it, let's say, from wave energy. And by purchasing from this source, you, I don't know, save 100 trees. I think that the consumer would be more understandable for you. Plus, you would say, wow, I didn't only pay my bill, but like I actually contribute to the environment. I removed some, you know, carbon emissions from the environment. So that's a great feeling. Right now, the consumer, on the consumer level, you don't get it. Like the government can say, I produced this amount of energy and took away this amount of pollution, but it's not, you know, on the actual consumer level.
Yeah. Well, the last question I have is just really about the future. And, you know, if you look at the next 3 to 5 years, what are some of the goals and successes you and the team would like to achieve?
So for the near future, what I would like is really, like you said, the launch in the Port of Los Angeles. We're also starting this year the construction of our first commercial scale wave energy power station, which will be launched in the city of Porto in Portugal. We just got the final license to start the construction. From our knowledge, it will be the first commercial wave energy installation in the world. So here we're getting a chance to prove that wave energy is not only, you know, cost efficient, reliable, environmentally friendly, and easily connected grid, but that we can actually scale, produce large energy amounts, and show profitability, which is a big aspect of commercialization. So that's something we're very excited about. So that's the near future. And, you know, farther into the future, what I would like to see is much more working power stations anywhere in the world where there is a breakwater. There definitely, again, the breakwater is not used for anything. You can put a hotel there. It's not been rented out for any usage, the external part. So I would really like to see that all breakwaters in the world that are suitable will accommodate wave energy kind of devices. And even more so, if we're going back to my political science kind of background, like you said, I would like to see legislation every time a new breakwater is built, already in the design construction phase, to kind of make it suitable or make the adjustments, very minimal adjustments that are needed in the structures to accommodate wave energy. Because then you don't have to take an unrelated technology and combine it with an unrelated structure. You have a structure that is actually built for the technology. And with climate change, there is much more storms. There is, you know, the rising of the water levels. So there's much, much more of these breakwaters that are being built in the world. And these breakwaters, they're protecting the coastal population and the ports, but they're not good for the environment. Cement in the water, stones in the middle of the ocean is not a good thing for the environment. So this is where to build them to protect the population, which is an important need. If they would come combined with renewable energy, then you can minimize their negative impact and kind of, you know, bring up their positive impact.
Well, thank you so much, Anita. This was, you know, fascinating discussion for me. I love learning about this stuff. So your journey is incredible. Congrats on all the success so far, and best of luck to you and the team for the next decades to come.
Thank you very much, Grant. It was a pleasure.